Anyway, we're stoked, though, that you're here, and we're doing a little mini-series, actually really mini, 2 weeks. That's pretty mini. We started it last week. We're ending it this week, and it's called Go Home, and what we're looking at is how what Jesus does in our hearts and our lives, what he does to us and for us, is not meant to just be significant for us. It's meant to be significant for the lives of people all around us. And it's not meant to be this little kind of secretive relationship with Jesus, this private encounter, you know, or treated like some embarrassing visit to a clinic. It's meant to be public, right? We don't just memo down on like page 2 of our new Bibles, got saved, and, you know, then that's it. No one, what Jesus does in us and for us and to us is meant to be something that impacts everyone around us. And so we're talking about that kind of now because summer's coming, and invariably we end up, you know, with just, you know, maybe some more free time for some of us and kind of around a lot more people, and that's various different people. You might be, your boat might be parked at Shack, and you end up talking to people next to you or whatever the case may be. We end up in conversations that we just we want to all be prepared for this summer to be able to talk about what Jesus has done for us. So last week, if you weren't here, we looked at a guy who was possessed by demons, and just a crazy story. Jesus cast these demons into pigs, and it's just a whole, if you didn't hear that one, I'd go back and listen to it. But what happens is this guy gets his life changed. Jesus sets him free. And he goes from being this naked, bloody, demon-possessed guy to being this powerful instrument for Jesus. He goes and he tells everybody in his town what Jesus has done, and they all marvel. They are in awe of what's happened. And so it's pretty powerful. And then this week we're looking at a similar story. These stories aren't meant to be like, this is like the Hall of Fame for people who got saved. These are meant to show us case studies of what it really looks like when we meet Jesus. Right? Because we've got a pretty low standard in our day. It's like, try Jesus, and you know, maybe your teeth will get whiter. If you watch some of the guys on television, it's so lame, the bar that we've set for what Jesus does, that it's helpful to be reminded what Jesus actually does. He changes everything. And it's also helpful to see that what these people did when they met Jesus wasn't sort of, you know, just pencil it down, memo, I got saved today, you know, note to self, don't tell anybody. They went and told everybody. And whole cities and regions were changed. And so, and finally, the goal for this morning for me, I'd love for you to catch what happened to this woman. What success looks like is not that, you know, we just have this awesome moment with God that no one finds out about. And success also doesn't look like, you know, everyone gets amazed by our life. Wow, you're so much better and so much different now. Ultimately, what we hope happens is that people see what Jesus has done to us, and it causes them to go meet Jesus for themselves and get their own story, right? That's what we really hope happens. And so I'm going to read for us John 4. This is the story of the woman at the well, Jesus meeting the woman at the well. And it's a long story. I just want to prepare you. We're not going to hit all this stuff. And if you doze off in the middle of me reading this, we have the lights dimmed for that reason. We're not going to call you out. I may call you out, but what we'll do, we'll circle back on this, and we'll break it down. It'll all make sense, okay? So let's jump into it. John chapter 4, verse 1. Now, Jesus learned the Pharisees had heard that he was making and baptizing more disciples than John, although Jesus himself did not baptize, but only his disciples. He left Judea and departed again for Galilee and had to pass through Samaria, so he came to a town of Samaria called Sychar near the field that Jacob had given to his son Joseph. Jacob's well was there, so Jesus, wearied as he was from his journey, was sitting beside the well. It's about the sixth hour. A woman from Samaria came to draw water. Jesus said to her, "Give me a drink," for his disciples had gone away into the city to buy food. The Samaritan woman said to him, "How is it that you, a Jew, ask for a drink from me, a woman of Samaria? For Jews have no dealings with Samaritans." And Jesus answered her, "If you knew the gift of God and who it was that's saying to you, 'Give me a drink,' you would have asked him, and he would have given you living water." The woman says to him, "Sir, you have nothing to draw water with, and the well is deep." She's imagining Jesus, you know, getting held by his feet, trying to scoop up water in his hands. "Where do you get that living water? Are you greater than our father Jacob? He gave us the well and drank from it himself, as did his sons and his livestock." And Jesus said to her, "Everyone who drinks of this water will be thirsty again, but whoever drinks of the water that I will give him will never be thirsty again. The water I will give him will become in him a spring of water welling up to eternal life." The woman said to him, "Sir, give me this water so that I will not be thirsty or have to come back here to draw water." And Jesus said to her, "Go call your husband and come here." The woman answered him, "I have no husband." Jesus said to her, "You're right in saying that you have no husband, for you have had five husbands, and the one you now have is not your husband. What you've said is true." The woman said to him, "Sir, I perceive you're a prophet. Our fathers worshipped on this mountain, but you say in Jerusalem, the place where people ought to worship." Jesus said to her, "Woman, believe me, the hour is coming when neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem will you worship the Father. You worship what you do not know. We worship what we know, for salvation is from the Jews. But the hour is coming, is now here, when the true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and in truth, for the Father is seeking such people to worship him. God is spirit. Those who worship him must worship him in spirit and truth." The woman said to him, "I know the Messiah is coming. He is called the Christ. When he comes, he will tell us all things." Jesus said to her, "I who speak to you am he." Jesus, just then, his disciples came back. They marveled that he was talking with a woman, but no one said, "What do you seek?" or "Why are you talking to her?" So the woman left her water jar and went away into town and said to the people, "Come see a man who told me all that I ever did. Can this be the Christ?" They went out of town and were coming to him. Meanwhile, the disciples were urging him, "Rabbi, eat." But he said to them, "I have food to eat that you do not know about." So the disciples said to one another, "Has anyone brought him something to eat?" These guys, they really think about food a lot. Jesus said to them, "My food is to do the will of him who sent me and to accomplish his work. Do you not say there are yet 4 months, then comes the harvest? Look, I tell you, lift up your eyes and see the fields are white for harvest. Already the one who reaps is receiving wages and gathering the fruit for eternal life, so that the sower and reaper may rejoice together. For here the saying holds true, one sows, another reaps. I sent you to reap for that for which you did not labor. Others have labored and you're entering into their labor." Many Samaritans from that town believed in him because of the woman's testimony, "He told me all that I ever did." So when the Samaritans came to him and they asked him to stay with them, he stayed there 2 days, and many more believed because of his word. They said to the woman, "It is no longer because of what you said that we believe, for we have heard for ourselves and we know that this is indeed the Savior of the world." So, like I said, we're not going to get into all this, and there's a lot going on here. Let me just recap it for you. Basically, Jesus meets a woman who sleeps around a lot. His disciples are obsessed with food, and the whole city gets changed, right? That's the basic story. Now, let's break it down and see why it's helpful for you and I. The first thing we need to do is look at this lady. What do we learn about her, right? Every time this woman opens her mouth, you know what we learn? She's really trying hard to be satisfied. Everything this woman says, the entire thing, shows her attempts. She is so deeply desiring satisfaction. The simple things, like she's trying to get it through basic essentials like water. You know, she's going to the well because she woke up and she's thirsty. She carries this heavy jar. She goes to the well. She's got to get water. You know, that's something that all of us deal with, right? We don't need a lot of the stuff we have, but we sure do need water, right? She needed water. We need water. She's trying to get satisfied through basic essentials. Doesn't sound that evil. The next thing is a little different. She's trying to get satisfaction through just religious history and tradition, and she's just name-dropping right out the gates, you know, Jacob and, you know, Old Testament this and mountains and all this. She just can't help herself. She's showing that she puts a lot of stock in the fact that she goes to the well where Jacob's cows used to drink from. She puts a lot of stock in the fact that she worships at a mountain where, you know, one time God showed up and did this thing. She feels a sense of pride that she's at the right place to do these things where God once did something. It's a big deal for her. Maybe that doesn't seem too bad either. The next thing's a little more sinister. She's trying to get satisfaction through sexuality. Through sexual promiscuity. What we see from her history here is that this is not a woman who's just stayed on the safe path for satisfaction. She has, maybe in dark moments of great pain and desperation, wandered down other paths and has put her in bed with man after man in an attempt to numb the pain of emptiness she feels. Well, thank God we're nothing like her. Right? Wrong. Basically, I just summed up everybody in the room, including myself. Right? In one way or another, we're just like her. We so often read the Bible and we think, oh, thousands of years ago, oh, those people must be so different. No, they were just living back then. We're just living now. It's just time that separates us. We're the exact same. We are all looking for deep satisfaction, and we look for it the same way she does. Let me break that down for you. Some of us, we're looking through just basic essentials. Some of you here just say, man, if I could just get a roof over my head, if I could have 1 month where I paid all the bills, man, I'd be just, my life would be so much better. My life would be perfect if I could just have just enough food to eat, enough water to drink, I'd be so satisfied. Just one time is all I need. Some of us through religious tradition. I go to church every week. I pray the right prayers. I have the right hour-long quiet time. Some of us through darker things. Sexuality, drugs, alcohol. See, what we see when we read the story, if you've read it before, you're just like, gosh, this woman's a mess. What a train wreck. No bigger mess than you and me. And what we also have in common with her is she didn't know she was a mess either. She's just going through the motions. Get up, go to the well. Time to worship, go to the mountain. Those two things don't work, go find a man. When we face her brokenness, it's like a mirror for our own brokenness. What's amazing about this woman is not that she's so different than us. What is amazing is that after thousands of years, she's just like us. So what does Jesus do with such a broken, messed up woman? Well, the first thing he does is pretty cool. He confuses the heck out of this lady, right? He just totally, utterly confuses her. And I'm going to just talk about this because some of you might be new to Jesus. And you're here going, you know what? I don't know that I totally get everything about this guy. And is that normal, or does that mean I'm just, something's wrong with me? I want to tell you that's completely normal. It's completely normal for you to have questions about Jesus, right? Jesus identifies with you and I, but Jesus is so much greater than you and I. He is so much bigger than you and I, so much more than you and I, that if we see him for who he really is, it staggers us. It confuses us. If you're seeing him rightly, it makes you step back, right? It's a little, see, this woman, for example, when you look at her and you think, gosh, yeah, I mean, she's looking to all the wrong things for satisfaction, looking for love in all the wrong places, right? Then she makes these mistakes that she probably swore she'd never do again, and she feels guilt and she feels shame. We're like, we really understand this lady. We look at Jesus, and he's like the perfect picture of everything we could and should be, but are not. It is a little staggering, and it's a little confusing, right? And if you're new to Jesus, maybe you've noticed, like I've noticed, that Jesus promises to do things in our lives that make us scratch our heads. He tells this woman, I'm going to give you this living water. And she's like, where's the bucket? How's this going to happen, right? And some of us, we read the Bible, and Jesus says he's going to do this and do that. And we're like, gosh, where's the bucket? I don't get it. How are you going to pull this off? There's this other thing, too, Jesus does. He makes her uncomfortable with how comfortable he, the Son of God, is talking about the stuff that she's dealing with, the dark, shameful stuff. And maybe you, like me, feel a little bit like, gosh, Jesus, I kind of want to get my life cleaned up and then we can talk, right? We get uncomfortable with the fact that Jesus is comfortable meeting us in our darkest moment. So after Jesus confuses her, the next thing he does is begin to systematically dismantle all the things she's looking for satisfaction to and just show her how pointless they all are. He starts off with this basic essentials list. He tells her, look, this is just going to bring momentary relief. This water you're going to drink, you're going to feel good for a minute. You know what? You're going to have to go drink more water. That's just how it goes. You drink water, you have to go get more water. That, after thousands of years, we haven't fixed that. Not even really good water, like Fiji water. Not even that can make you, none of that. It's just a waste of money. You drink that water, and guess what? You need more water. Only you're just a little more broke than you were the first time you tried to get water, right? We haven't fixed that thousands of years later. There's whole shows about people living out in like Alaska and the wild frontier. And the plot line for most of those shows is weird people trying to find water. That's what's happening. They're all trying to find water and trying to find something to eat and trying to keep a roof over their head. And it's every day, all they're doing is going out, doing that again. And the next day they get up and do that again. That's because all of us, we all need these basic essentials, water and food and air and shelter. But we never just have them. We always have to have more of them. And Jesus is telling her, look, if that's what you're looking for satisfaction, you're never going to find it. You're always going to need more and more and more and more and more. And the relief you get when you get it is going to be gone because then you're going to need more. And then he moves on to something even bigger. He tells her that essentially this this attempt she has to find satisfaction and find meaning and value in life and religious tradition is worthless. And so she's boasting about drawing well at this, you know, water this well where Jacob's cows and kids and everybody went. And, you know, she refers to him, our father Jacob, and she talks about this mountain where God showed up whatever millenniums ago. And that's all nice information, but you know what it is? It's ancient history. She wasn't there when the well was built. She wasn't there when God showed up on the mountain. All she had was historical data. I mean, it made her feel warm and fuzzy inside to do it, but that's it. This woman had no personal relationship with Jesus, no personal knowledge, no current information about God. She had nothing. All she had was somebody told her that somebody told her that somebody told her that God showed up on this mountain one time and these animals drank from this well. That's all she had. And Jesus tells her, you worship what you do not know. You don't know anything about this. You're just going through the motions. It's just another useless attempt to find satisfaction. I mean, what's she going to do? She dies. She meets God. You know what? You know why you should let me in here? Because I went to Jacob's well. That's why. Oh, and I went to that one mountain when I used to worship. No ways. That's never enough. And again, it's just like us, because I think a lot of us in church today, we don't have a actual, real, personal, current relationship with God. We've got something, somewhere, somebody, some whatever, ancient history. And the next thing Jesus does is incredibly unsettling. He lovingly exposes her sexual brokenness. He tells her, go call your husband. And what he's doing is revealing that you've got bigger problems than the well you drink at and the mountain you worship on, right? But how he does it is really remarkable. The first thing you have to realize is to get this is who Jesus was. He's the sinless, holy, perfect Son of God who never sinned, not once, not ever. He is also God, and so all sin is chiefly sin against him before it's sin against anybody else, right? He is perfect in every way. Now, he, perfect Jesus, not me and not you, meets a woman who has had 5 husbands and is living with a guy who's not her husband and has probably, we can guess, lived with multiple other guys, not her husband, in between all the 5 husbands. Now, I'm not trying to be funny, so don't laugh. But even in today's standards, 5 husbands is a lot. Even today, that's a lot. And Jesus, not me and you, perfect, holy Jesus is talking to this woman. And what we expect is Jesus to treat her and to kind of act with just hatred and judgment and we just expect him to use derogatory terms to refer to her and to really just bash her in every way, but with disgust. And it's not what Jesus does. Jesus is incredibly kind in how he draws this out. Go find your husband. I know you don't have a husband. And I know that you've had 5 before that. And this woman's testimony, when she goes and tells her friends and her neighbors, she says, this guy knew everything I ever did. This woman has a long string of very hurtful, shameful attempts to get satisfied. And let's just focus on her for a second. Let's just imagine what it was like to be her. I'm guessing between every man, she probably thought this, never again. Never again. I'm never going to do this again. Or maybe she thought this, okay, again, but not with a man like that. Clearly that was a mistake. Clearly that was a bad call. Not with a man like that. Or maybe she thought this, okay, just one more time. See how instantly you identify with her? And then in between all those moments, there's trips to the well and trips to the mountain where she promises herself and promises God, I'll never do it again. And then subsequently breaks her promises to herself and her promises to God. More shame, more guilt, more shame, more guilt. And then she meets Jesus who knows everything she's ever done. She's now in a relationship where it's just a dead-end street. I mean, she's this broken, hurting shell of a woman. There's no way she can really satisfy this man. There's no way this man can satisfy her. Little relationship 101 for you. 2 half people don't equal a whole relationship. We actually need to like get whole as people, find Jesus, you know? And then we can actually contribute to a relationship and serve and give and do all the things we're meant to do. These two, they're just feeding off each other's brokenness. So in this really vulnerable, terrible stage in her life, she meets Jesus. And if you can feel how she feels exposed and vulnerable, thankfully Jesus doesn't leave her there. He goes on and he declares he's the answer to all she's ever wanted. She says, here's what I do know. I know the Messiah is coming. I know. And Jesus said, I who speak to you am he. I'm not a better version of Jacob's well. I'm the bread of life. He says in John 6:35, I'm the bread of life. Whoever comes to me shall not hunger. Whoever believes in me shall never thirst. What Jesus is saying is, look, you believe in me. You worship me, not this mountain. You depend on me, not this well. Depend on me, and you'll never thirst again. You'll be satisfied. And that's a lot more than this woman asked for when she woke up in the morning and decided to go get some water. How does she respond? The first thing she does is she abandons her water jar. Now, that might seem insignificant. It might even be insignificant. I don't know. I wasn't there. But what it does is it tells me the state of mind this woman's in. She started off going, I'm thirsty. Carry heavy jar across hot sand to a well. Fill it up. Carry even heavier jar back to town. She starts off, I'm thirsty. And by the time she's done with Jesus, she doesn't even remember she's thirsty. She actually doesn't remember she's going to be thirsty again. She leaves the water jar and just takes off running. She's so impacted by Jesus that she's forgotten her most primal instinct, water. Her whole priorities have changed. She's not even thinking about her satisfaction anymore. All she can think about is, I have to go tell everybody about Jesus. She goes home, she tells everyone. The verse says she tells the people, and the people is just it just means mankind. Literally, this woman went and told everybody with a pulse, you have to come meet Jesus. Now that's convicting for me. I don't know if it is for you, because we don't necessarily do it like that, right? We choose who we're going to tell about Jesus based on, you know, various factors like, you know, will they accept it? Will they reject me? Will they mock me? You know, maybe even we're a little more sinister. You know, hey, if your dog would quit pooping on my lawn, maybe I'd tell you about Jesus. Or, you know, if you hadn't done this one thing you did to me at work or whatever, you know, we withhold the news about what Jesus has done for various reasons. This woman did none of that. She told everything with a pulse. They had to come meet Jesus. Now imagine them. They're probably a little skeptical, right? Here comes the woman who's been with every man in town. And what is she going to say? She says, come meet a man. Oh yeah, here we go again. Another man. You think that's what you need, another man. But this man was different, because this man, maybe the first man ever, treated her with dignity and respect, made no advances on her. Loved her, cared for her. And then what she adds next is what I'm sure drug them in. Come meet a man who told me everything I ever did. Now, I'm not this woman, but I've done some stuff. You're not this woman, but you've done some stuff. Imagine you met somebody who knew everything you ever did. Probably the last thing we'd be doing is dragging them in here going, hey, you guys gotta meet this person. They know everything, right? We'd be like, how does that whole concrete to the feet off the bridge thing work? Like, how do you do that? We wouldn't want anybody to meet him. She wants everybody to meet him. And what we see is that she met Jesus in this really dark, vulnerable, you know, tragic point in her life. He knew everything about her. But the fact that Jesus loved her and cared for her, it surpassed her shame. It surpassed these instincts that we all have to cover up what we do. She's like, I don't care. You got to meet this guy. He knows everything I ever did, and yet he still talked to me and cared about me. It's powerful. So persuasive that everyone begins to flood to Jesus. And it says many Samaritans from that town believed. Her story led to them meeting Jesus, led to them having their story. It wasn't isolated. It wasn't disconnected. They wanted what had happened to her to happen to them. You know how rare that can be today? Hardly anybody wants to be like most of us, right? They wanted to be like, they wanted what happened to her to happen to them. It's powerful. That's how they responded. What about you and I? I think it's as for those of us who are Christians in the room, we can learn a lot from this story. First thing, we obviously learn from Jesus, motivated by love, right? I moved with compassion. This is how Jesus treats really broken, messed up people. And I think it's a good question to ask ourselves. Is that how we treat people? Or are we condescending, judgmental, derogatory? Do we treat people like projects need fixing? Or like people like us, broken, who need a savior? Are we courageous like Jesus to call sentiment what it is? Worthless. I mean, you and I meet people and they're like, well, yeah, no, I'm going to heaven. How do you know? Oh, I don't want to see a light at the end of a tunnel because my grandma gave $1,000 to this thing one time and this missionary in India came by and coughed and I think it got on me and whatever. I mean, we hear these stories and we just go, oh, okay. Sounds good, I guess. Rather than just say, no, that's not enough, man. You got to know Jesus. You got to believe in Jesus. Believe on Jesus. Put your faith in him. Have a relationship with him. I love the courage Jesus has in this. I think we can also, as Christians, we can learn from the disciples. Now, there's some stories we can learn from their good example. This is not one of them, right? We have not mentioned them until this point in the message because their contribution is so weak, it's embarrassing. Let me recount for you what the mighty disciples of Jesus contributed to this powerful story, right? The first thing they do is they leave to go buy food. Then they come back from buying food, offended that Jesus is talking to a woman. Then they're obsessed with the fact that Jesus won't eat, led to Jesus saying he's not hungry, and they start asking, okay, who snuck away while we were buying food and brought Jesus a honey bun trying to score some extra points, right? They just can't move off the subject. You know, what is wrong? Why won't Jesus eat? Now let's take it from another angle. Jesus wiped out, worn out, so tired he can't even stand up. Wearied from his journey, lays down up against this well. It's hot. He's tired. And one woman walks up to Jesus, wiped out, exhausted, and a whole region gets changed. A whole band of Jesus' fearless disciples march together into a city full of thousands of people, and nobody gets their life changed. Wow, we're a lot like them. Go out and all together and do these things together and go have lunch together or whatever, and nobody even knows Jesus exists. We get so caught up with offended by that and mad about that and why'd you do that and why'd you say that and why were you talking to them that we just miss the fact that God's at work. We're just like them. I'm just like them. Here's the thing. That's what I love about Jesus in this passage with his kind of messed up band of disciples. He doesn't fire them, right? He doesn't start over and say, you know what, guys, I've had enough. But enough of all the talk about food and all the little secret conversations you're all having. And I've had enough. This woman's got an awesome, rocking, amazing story. We got a whole bunch of people here who really want to follow me. These are my new disciples. You guys can take a hike. That's not what Jesus does. He doesn't fire them. He re-envisions them. He says, here's the thing, guys. Look around you. Open your eyes. Just lift up your eyes. Just look. Just look everywhere. The fields are white. God's at work all around you. It's not this like, hey, it's Monday. Oh, in 6 days on Sunday, God's going to, no. God's at work right now. Oh, I'm at work. I wish God was at work here like he is on Sunday mornings in One Arbor. No, he's at work. Driving down the road, I wish God was at work. He sounds like he's at work in India right now. No, he's at work right here, right now. Everywhere we go, he's at work. He said, just look. Fields are white with harvest. He said, you know what my food is? Do the will of him who sent me. And then just chapters later, he's going to tell his disciples, you know what? I'm sending you like he sent me. So we're all sent, right? And so what Jesus says is, you know, God's at work. He's at work all around us, at school and at home and at the post office and at work and out on the beach and everywhere we go. God's at work. Just look around you. He's at work. That that boat full of crazy college kids pulled up next to you, that God's at work there, and that God's at work everywhere we look. God's at work. Let's open our eyes and see it. And then let's let our food, what really motivates us. These guys were so motivated about food. He said, let that same motivation you've got to eat something and find something to eat, let that like apply to this work that God's doing, and let that be your food. Get out there and really get in that and be eager to be part of that. Jesus doesn't want to fire us for doing poorly. He wants to remind us of this potential we have all around us because God's at work. And I think all of us can learn from this woman. Let me ask you a question, a little pop quiz. Do any of us, and you don't have to raise your hand, deal with kind of religious sentimentality and tradition and putting stock in the wrong things? Do any of us here, do any of us trust for basic essentials like food and water and housing and those things to maybe satisfy us more than they ever could? Do any of us do darker things than that? Maybe things like this woman did or worse? And if you answered no to all three of those, nope, I don't deal with any of that. We love you, but you're a liar. Because all of us do that. The default mode of my heart and your heart, our default mode is to look to things that aren't God to do what only God can do. That's the default mode. This relationship is really going to satisfy. I met this guy or I met this girl. I'm telling you, this time, my whole life, we're going to complete each other. You complete me. This one job, if I got that one job, I'd be totally satisfied. If I had that house, that's the house. If we had that, we'd be satisfied. Now, as Christians, we're not meant to live in denial. We're meant to live in repentance. We don't show up going, oh, we don't deal with that. What are you talking about? I don't ever deal with that. Oh my gosh, I deal with that. Nobody can ever find out. No, man, we deal with that. We all deal with that. That's why we're here. We're here to go, hey, guess what? All of us, we all deal with that, and we need Jesus. We need to be reminded that Jesus and Jesus alone can satisfy us. And for you who are not yet a Christian here this morning, and are finding that maybe you put your stock in the wrong thing, you know, some of the stuff the lady did, lovingly, I want to tell you that none of that stuff is ever going to satisfy you. That next relationship or that next job or that next whatever, none of that's going to satisfy you. It's not. It can't. It can't do it. C.S. Lewis says this. He said, idols always break the hearts of their worshipers. You know what this stuff's like? It's like those mirages. You're running through the desert. Oh my gosh, there's water. And you end up with more dirt in your mouth. That's what it feels like because that's what it is. And if you're here this morning, that's you. I want to tell you that only Jesus can satisfy you. And you need to surrender your life to him. And I'm not up here because I'm the only one who didn't need that. I'm here because I needed that. You need that. And as we approach communion this morning, what we're doing is remembering Jesus. That Jesus didn't just talk a good talk, right? He didn't just dangle a carrot out there and say, I'll satisfy you, I'll fill your hunger and your thirst. Jesus gave his own body and shed his own blood to do just that. He told his disciples in Mark 14, he broke the bread and said, take this. This is my body. He passed his cup around. He said, this is my blood shed. This new covenant poured out for many. His own body and his own shed blood. That's what satisfies us, gives us new life. Putting our hope and our faith in him. And so for those of us who are Christians, we come this morning and we take communion and we're saying, Jesus, thank you so much. We are deeply satisfied because of you. We don't need anything else but you. In fact, Jesus, help us not to take the things that we have in our life and the relationships, and help us not to try to look to those things to bring what only you can bring. Help us just to trust you, to depend on you. And if you're here and you don't know Jesus, man, you shouldn't take communion. Don't just go through the motions. This isn't meant to just be tradition. But if you're here this morning, you're saying, gosh, I didn't know Jesus was this great. I want to give my life to Jesus. We'd love to pray with you. And man, today would be a great day for you to take communion. And the last thing we're going to do today is we're going to celebrate with baptisms. And there's a list of people who've already signed up saying, hey, I want to get baptized this morning. And there's some people who are here that probably should get baptized that didn't sign up. And that's all right. We brought you a shirt and a towel. And here's the thing. Baptism is this outward symbol. It's just showing on the outside for everybody, for as many people as possible. This is what Jesus has done. Jesus has saved me. Jesus has changed me. I'm not putting stock in the fact that my grandma went to church or whatever. I'm saying Jesus, the real Jesus, has saved me. He has changed me. And if you're here this morning, you're saying, you know what? I didn't come ready to get baptized, but I need to do that. I want everybody to know that I'm Jesus is where I'm putting my hope. And we would love to talk to you about that. And what we can do when we stand up here in just a minute, if that's you, just slip out to the lobby. If you've already planned on getting baptized and or if you didn't plan on it but want to, Jesse will meet you out in the lobby and he'd love to talk with you about that. So why don't we stand together? The band can come on up. Let me pray for us.